Thank you, everyone, for joining us this afternoon. Hopefully, everyone had a good lunch and good networking opportunities this afternoon. My name is G. Kim. I'm the managing shareholder of the Singapore office of Better Price. It's my pleasure to moderate this this panel, the first panel after lunch, called The New Landscape of Ship Finance. We have with us a diverse group of folks who will share their insights into the market, with, you know, representative from DNB Markets and Lilac Global, MPC Container Ships, and I'll let them in a few minutes, you know, give a brief introduction. But to kind of set the stage for this panel session, we know that we are operating in a market, the shipping market, which is very fast moving, right? And in a fast-moving market, decisions have to be made. Decisions have to be evaluated. You know, whether to charter in, charter out. You know, do we dabble in the spot market? You know, how do we optimize our balance sheets and align our risk return in making these decisions? And in the current market, the challenges are evident and the challenges are there when it comes to managing and overseeing the potentials and the opportunities for ship finance. Certainly in the last year or so, we've seen numerous events that are creating more uncertainty in the market when it comes to the traditional financing opportunities. Year over year, I think it's pretty safe to say that the bank market has been relatively flat, but on the contrary, the bond market, depending on the region, you could say it's been actually quite active. Comparing that to the finance lease market that are, you know, in this region offered up by perhaps the PRC leasing companies, we've seen a bit more perhaps conversations and dialogue and opportunities that are evident there. But in light of that, how do we gauge the market in light of the recent geopolitical, recent regulatory challenges that the market faces? And then, of course, when it comes to financing, we cannot ignore sort of the private credit that's out there, that's growing ever more present in their influence in the market and filling what we call the sort of the funding gaps, to the point that perhaps they're not quite alternative anymore, despite the name. So what does the future hold for the ship finance? So, and now that with that background, I'll turn it over to each of the panel members here for a short introduction before we hit off on the topics. Joachim, you want to start? Yep.
Hello, can you hear me? Yeah. Yeah, so my name is Joachim Skorge. I'm responsible for investment banking for DNB here in Asia Pacific. I've been based here in Singapore for a long time already, since 2007 actually. Before that, I worked in New York and before that in Oslo. So my focus throughout my career has really been investment banking with an emphasis on maritime and energy and really working across products. I'm not a commercial banker, but we do on the market side bond transactions, you know, actually now very frequently for maritime issuers. We also work equities and M&A, and of course we also have a very close cooperation with our colleagues providing lending on the corporate banking side. So that's a quick introduction to myself.
Thank you. Steve?
Hi, can you hear me? Yes, I'm Steve Wagner. I'm the CFO of Lila Global. We're a vessel owner based in Dubai, so we've got a fleet of around 40 vessels at the current point in time, mainly across dry bulk, container ships, and also chemical tankers. I'm also CFO of GMS, which is one of our other group companies, so which, as many of you may know, is the largest cash buyer of vessels for recycling in the world. So I think we think we've got a pretty unique strategic position in the shipping market in terms of we've got exposure across the full life cycle of the shipping asset. We've got two large businesses that kind of provide a natural hedge against each other. We've got Lila Global, which is tends to do well, obviously, when the charter rates are high and the recycling volumes fall. But then, obviously, when the charter rates fall, then GMS tends to be stronger with the recycling transactions. So in terms of investments, we make investments across the full asset life cycle. We think we've got sort of cradle-to-grave expertise in terms of we've invested in new builds, for instance, but we've also invested in vintage assets. So I think probably to use an analogy, we're quite comfortable being the midwife during the birth of the vessel, and we can manage it through to retirement, but we can also sort of take care of the funeral arrangements at the end of the life as well through the GMS business. So obviously in a sustainable way. So.
Right, Moritz?
All right. Moritz Fuhrmann, I'm the co-CEO and CFO of MPC Container Ships, which is a tonnage provider in the container space with the exclusive focus on feeder vessels. We own around 60 vessels, which means that we are the largest tonnage provider in that subsegment. And obviously, over the last, let's call it 4 to 5 years, we have been experiencing a fantastic time. Also, thanks to geopolitical turmoils ongoing in the world.
Perfect. I appreciate the introduction. So we'll get started with the topics. I'd say about a week or so ago, I get a email message from one of my PRC contacts saying, should I be worried about the U.S. tariffs and everything that's happening in the U.S.? Short answer, probably. But you know, the geopolitical issues, and Moritz, you just kind of nice segue there. The potential for major disruption and changes in the traditional ways that we think about the traditional routes and the effects that it has on the shipping market under the second Trump administration with the numerous trade policies. But it's not just tariffs, right? That's in the news. We knew that there were existing sanctions regimes already in place in the U.S., in the EU, in the U.K., which has and could have increasing sort of ton-mile demand, sort of affecting the demands of the market. With so much going on in the fundamentals that are affecting the fundamentals and the shipping market's sensitivities to all the geopolitical issues that we're hearing in the news, the query is, you know, how does these issues, these geopolitical issues, affect the opportunities that we see, the potential opportunities that we see in ship finance? You know, certainly it seems there's an effect on the shipping rates or potential effects on the shipping rates, but that has been going on for a while now, right? Despite the recent issues that we see in the news. But however, even in the cyclical nature that we see in our market, shipping does seem profitable at the moment. And for how long, who knows? But then, given all these parameters and how I introduced that, these are some of the challenges that we face when decisions have to be made. Steve, let me start with you first. Where do you see any impact of these geopolitical issues, tariffs, to a lesser extent, maybe perhaps even sanctions, in the opportunities that you see in ship finance? And perhaps there's a difference between a short-term narrative and a long-term narrative. So I hand it over to you then.
Yeah. Yeah, so obviously, as you alluded to there, we're in very uncertain times at the moment. Obviously, Ukraine war, the Red Sea conflict, Trump. We've got Trump putting tariffs on everyone apart from his own mother, it would seem, at the moment. So, but that's shipping at the end of the day. That's what we all signed up for in this room. That's the nature of the industry. I don't think there's an industry out there that's more geopolitically exposed than shipping. I think in terms of short-term impacts, what we see, generally what you see with tariffs and other things is obviously a reduction in trade flows and also likely some supply chain rerouting. All things being equal with the impact of those, we are obviously expecting TCE rates to come down. In terms of the impact on financing, obviously lower TCE rates drives lower valuations, which will generally mean higher loan-to-value ratios, lower debt service coverage ratios. So from a financing perspective, the risk from a bank side is obviously increases. I know banks who finance shipping have obviously, they expect to take some of this geopolitical risk, but I think it's particularly prevalent at this moment in time. Another thing we're seeing, obviously, you mentioned the sanctions, is on the GMS side of the business, we get first-hand exposure to the sanctions on the vessel recycling side. And we are seeing some of the dark fleet being recycled by competitors of ours in contravention of sanctions. So that's something we would never get involved in as a company. Obviously, we've built up a 30-year reputation in the industry for, you know, being a great member of the shipping community, and everyone here, shipping such a great industry. We get to come to events like this. It's a really close knit community, and you build up your reputation over time. So we've built that reputation up over time. I think our mantra is that we sort of earn trust in drops, and you earn trust in droplets, but you lose it in buckets. So we would never enter into that sort of area in terms of vessel recycling. So what it does do. Is this okay? Yeah. What it does do is a lot of our clients are tending to come to us even more, to be honest, because they know that we can be trusted to recycle their assets in the right way.
Appreciate that. Appreciate that, Steve. I would say when it comes to sanctions, my observations, especially coming from the finance or banking side that I've seen, is it does require more internal additional oversight, right? That adds to the time of getting deals approved, for example, the conversations that needs to be had, perhaps some uncomfortable conversations that may need to be had, and needing to get through the additional monitoring aspects so that the compliance teams of the financiers and the banks will get comfortable with the particular opportunity that's in place. And from a ship owner's perspective, I think that adds to an additional layer of consideration that would need to do in light of all the other set of circumstances that sort of from the opposite perspective of the bank, right? So, Morris, let me turn it over to you. I mean, what are your thoughts on sort of the geopolitical aspects here?
I think generally speaking, geopolitical turmoils and disruptions are good for shipping, as it has always been. In terms of concrete things that are going on right now, Trump has been at power before in 2018, so we know what can happen to container trade from a US to China sanction perspective. Last time around, we have seen a short-term dent in demand, which was, from our perspective, more driven by sentiment. I think mid to long-term speaking, fundamentally, we don't see negative implication on the container market, because I think eventually Trump will make sure that domestic spending and domestic consumption in the US will hold up, and living in a free world, goods will find their way to the US, maybe not directly from China, but we have been seeing re-dissemination of production plants from China to the Philippines and Vietnam. That has been ongoing for quite some time, and it will also go on in the foreseeable future, meaning that there's a way to circumvent sort of direct sanctions on finished goods from the US to China. The different thing this time around is that we have a different form of sanctions, or at least the intention, which is sanctioning of Chinese-built ships calling the US ports. It's something that is not directly impacting MPCC as the owner of the ships. It's more impacting the operator, the liner companies of the vessels. But relatively speaking, or absolutely speaking, $1.5 million sounds like a high number. But relatively speaking, broken down to the per TU price, we think it's a digestible figure that will be basically passed on to the consumer or the customers of the liner company. So also from that perspective, we don't expect a negative mid to long term fundamental implication on the demand side.
Understood. Joachim, any sort of thoughts on this?
Well, I think the outlook is definitely more cloudy than we've seen for a long time, and I think it's affecting many markets. I think if you look at shipping equities, most companies are now trading at a discount to NAV, a lot of them at a deep discount to NAV. So what we've seen is that equity transactions have basically come to a halt. Also, obviously, share prices have been coming down, so it's less attractive to sell. And also, a lot of these companies are well capitalized after many good years in the shipping market, so there's no urgent need to raise capital. So we see less activity on the equity side. When it comes to the bond market, you know, the bond market is still strong, I would say, for shipping. We've seen a record amount of activity in 24 and also now in the first quarter. Maybe coming down a little bit, you know, just the last couple of weeks, but deals are still being done at very attractive terms. And I think a lot of shipping companies see this as a nice complement to bank financing. You can basically get flexible capital, unsecured, good companies, typically price in the range of, 7, 8, 9% in that market. So there we see a lot of activity. When it comes to M&A, I think there's a lot of pent-up demand for M&A. There's a lot of cash in the industry. People are looking to reinvest, you know, and people have been holding back because valuations have been high. So we have a lot of clients just looking for the right opportunity. But obviously, in the very short term, all these uncertainties we see when it comes to geopolitical issues and politics in the U.S. In particular, you know, people are probably not in a particular hurry because of that. It could slow things down a little bit potentially. But I do think in the medium term, we will see more shipping M&A. Another interesting topic is, of course, what's going to happen to the overall financing market. I think over the last few years, we've seen a shift with Western banks doing less, even though they are still active, but, you know, being more selective in terms of the type of clients and deals that they do with, and Asian banks, to a certain degree, replacing that, leasing also replacing that. And I guess it's going to be interesting to see with the current geopolitics, also the very hawkish sort of stance on China, you know, from the US, how that will affect the Chinese leasing market and how that will sort of unfold over the next few months. So a lot of interesting things to follow at the moment.
Yep. And I think that kind of is a good summary of what the current market situation, the sensitivities around where we are in the financing market is. But to sort of sum up the geopolitical issues, we know it's there. We know it's something that we need to address. What that world will look like today versus what it will look like in 6 months. I don't know if there's any certainty. There is no certainty there. So there's a certain degree of demand for flexibility and perhaps the right consensus is to just wait, right? And things will slow down. But evaluating ship financing, you know, does at the end of the day, much of it comes down to the fundamentals, right? The asset values, the cash flows. I think Moritz, you mentioned, about a lot of the additional costs just being passed down to a lot of customers. And maybe that'll bear come to fruition in the long run. But we'll certainly be, the market does have to be mindful of what these geopolitical and tariff and sanctions issues and how they will affect the opportunities there as far as ship financing. I want to shift gears just a little bit, but Joachim, you'd actually... nice segue there. When it comes to sort of evaluating the fundamentals that drives a lot of the ship financing opportunities, right? I mean, the cargo growth. Where is the demand? How is the PRC, adjusting? You know, there certainly seems to have slowed down just a little bit from their side. The reality is that I think there is we're always assessing the supply demand aspects of the market. And are we at a point where the supplies of capacity is it outpacing demand, or is it the other way around? And it'll be segmented by sort of the different sectors, of course. But the reason asking for this particular question lends itself to, the market has gone through some black swan events where it seems to have a bit of perhaps a few anomalies along the way as far as ship financing opportunities are concerned. So, Moritz, let me start with you here. Where is the state of the ship market in the current, and how would you evaluate it? What financing sources do you think that owners are trying to take advantage of today? And I think you had particular thoughts about the sort of the sustainability-linked green type of financings that are available. And the market is considering. So I'll start off with you.
Our current approach is basically using the fantastic market that we have and the liquidity that we have built up in the company to diversify as much as possible. And that means obviously traditional bank financing, that means leasing structures, that also means the bond market that Joachim was referring to. We have been using the bond market quite a lot recently. We've been also trying to expand internationally from a banking perspective. The Japanese market is incredibly interesting. I think from a container perspective, and I'm specifically talking about containers, and you refer to the order book, and there's obviously a massive capacity coming into the market, which obviously raises the question, how is this being financed? And historically speaking, I think we have seen high leverage structures, especially if those new builds are backed by long-term charters from liner companies, or the liner companies have, you know, the vessels on their own balance sheet also using high leverage. But I think what we have seen in containers is obviously the market has been so good that most of the people have been building up a huge cash pile, which then from my perspective also translates into a different capital structure of the new building book, which means that you would probably see lower leverage, generally speaking, in the container space. And that is also something that we as MPCC have been pursuing, obviously utilizing the cash that we have, but also being a bit prudent from a market perspective, because we all know we live in probably the most cyclical industry that is out there. And you obviously have to make sure that you're not caught off the wrong foot from a long-term perspective. So you don't want to lever up in this market, and then, you know, the market will go south in some point of the future. And you definitely want to make sure that you're managing your residual risk appropriately. And that is obviously not only applicable to us, that is also applicable to the large liner companies. But I think overall, from an owner's perspective, it's a fantastic market, because as long as you provide your own balance sheet from a recourse perspective, you should be able to get fantastic conditions, fantastic pricing, the right structures. And again, I think owners should use the times that we have now to diversify as much as possible to be able to access that capital again when the market is in a different state.
Steve?
Yeah, I think I would echo Moritz's sentiment there in terms of we've obviously been one of the fortunate owners to repay quite a lot of our debt facilities over the last 24 months. So we're probably about 3% LTV at the moment, which is would have been unthinkable probably 2 years ago. So I think our perspective is similar. We're going to go to the low LTVs going forwards. We see the cyclicality of the industry, obviously. In fact, we want to be supportive of the banking pool that we've had for the last 10 years, because it's not a great time to be a banker lending into the shipping industry at the moment, with the amount of repayments that are taking place, the impact of Basel IV and other initiatives. So, in fact, we've actually kept some of our facilities open that we, for all intents and purposes, we probably should have repaid financially. It made more sense to repay, but we chose to keep those in situ to maintain the relationships with the bank. So it's obviously a good place to be as an owner, but I think as a group we want to diversify our lending pool, obviously to probably take some Chinese leasing on this year, just to make sure we've got a really, you know, diversified pool of banks that are willing to lend to us at the appropriate time for growth.
Appreciate that. Joachim, you previously mentioned about sort of the bond market, right?
Yep.
And and it seems like this, at least in fairly recently, a lot of the owners are trying to, and the participants are trying to take advantage of where the bond markets are. So what are your thoughts on sort of where the mindset is as far as the and evaluating the ship finance market in currently?
Sorry, I missed the last part.
Yeah, so just your thoughts on sort of the current market state. I mean, I know you're coming from a very bond specific perspective as well, but as you kind of observe the market in general,
Okay. So just starting with shipping fundamentals, I think the near term peak is probably behind us when it comes to most shipping segments. But I don't think shipping has a terrible outlook fundamentally, unless you're very bearish on the world economy and trade wars escalating. So yeah, just have to see how that unfolds. When it comes to financing alternatives, you know, I think we've seen over the last few years that there are multiple sources available. Obviously, you have the traditional banks and European banks, you have Asian banks being more prominent, as I mentioned. Chinese leasing has been there for a while. Last few years, there's been also a trend towards Japanese leasing. I also think that Western leasing will become more sort of attractive and competitive in the years to come, both for geopolitical reasons and also because they can offer more flexibility and a more predictable, faster process. In the traditional banking market, I think we see that the top tier clients, you know, they get very low margins. You know, still it's very, very competitive for the top tier clients, and there's also a second tier market out there, typically served by slightly different banks, which is still active. So it's there's still multiple sources of capital for the industry at for the time being. Mm-hmm. In addition to bonds, of course.
Yes, of course. And Joachim, I'll stick with you as we kind of talk about as we continue our discussion about the general market. And when we're talking about bonds, I think you can also segment the world in different geography, right? I mean, you've got the Nordic bonds, which just seems to be doing very well, versus, say, the U.S. market, which seems to not have the same story, right? So it really depends on which part of which segment of that particular market you're talking about, right?
Absolutely. I think looking at the Nordic bond market, the attraction there is that the process is very, very efficient. You have a process that is, I would say, near perfect in terms of offering adequate investor protection and also being issuer friendly with a fast process, also yep. Lower legal cost, sorry, and I think it's well proven by now. So when we talk about the Nordic bond market, it's not really local investors investing into these deals. Of course, you have an element of that, but it's really just a hub for connecting international companies with international money at this point in time. And I think a lot of investors have had a sort of happy experience investing into that market, even here from Asia. So we see more and more funds in Asia allocating money to that that opportunity. So I think those are some of the main reasons why it's been so attractive. And also, as I said, terms are attractive. It's a flexible capital. I think we've seen over the last 15 months, more than 20 deals, you know, for reputable shipping companies in the Nordic market, DNB managing many of those transactions. And I think that will just continue. That's my outlook when it comes to bonds.
Steve, just shifting gears a little bit then, you mentioned earlier in one of your responses, sort of continuing the relationship with the traditional banks. Certainly, it's not lost in the market that regulatory sort of requirements, especially in the EU, with Basel IV having to deal with the realities of for many of the European banks, and the potential in the market to at least optically create what seems to be an uneven level playing field, right? Those banks, European banks, that have to price in their regulatory requirements versus those international banks and local banks that perhaps do not. Do you see a sort of a shift in sort of conversations that you may need to have or you are having with your bank contacts and clients or relationships?
Yeah, we definitely see firsthand the differential in pricing first and foremost. And I think but we completely understand the reason for that differential. As you alluded to there, it's Basel IV requirements on European banks having to put more capital against the loans. And then obviously you overlay that with the geopolitical risk on top of everything else. So we do sympathize with the banks that we've been dealing with for many years. And the price disparity is not huge. So we as a company, as a group, we're still doing business with our existing banks, and it's just finding the balance really between the financing pools, I think, is where we're coming from as an owner.
Moritz, your thoughts?
Yeah, I would probably call it Basel V by now because it has been amended so many times. We do see selectively differences now with when we have discussion with banks. There are some banks that are by now a bit more restrictive, not only pricing, also when it comes to tenors of the loans. Then there's other European banks that are sort of do business as usual. But I think I would agree with Steve. You know, it's and we as a company, we're not overly price sensitive, right? We also value relationship, and we're willing to pay for a relationship. And there's, you know, and some banks that are also traditionally maybe a bit more expensive on the pricing, they're obviously a bit more, there might be a bit more wiggle room on the general structure. So there's a certain degree of complexity, obviously, from when structuring a loan, and some banks they you know they have a creative approach to ship lending, and that's then obviously their cutting edge to continue to do shipping business irrespective of the increasing regulation, and maybe having to price the loan a bit higher than in the past. But I think there's still space for those banks to do good business in shipping.
Mm-hmm. Let me throw out a show some love to the private credit guys, just to the panelists here. They certainly have a role to play, right, given sort of the spectrum of market participants that will need financing and that has needed financing. Is it so alternative anymore? I mean, we used to think of Chinese leasing as an alternative financing, but now they're pretty, sort of mainstream financing. So, what are your thoughts on sort of the private credit's sort of positioning and role today that can play in the shipping market?
I was on the private credit side myself, so I'm obviously heavily biased, but I think it's a fantastic product. Maybe less from a Basel IV, Basel V perspective, but more so from a perspective that private credit is being able to act counter cyclical. But that also means that in the current times, it's probably tough to do a certain amount of new business. But again, shipping cyclical, and I'm pretty sure in the next 3 to 5 years, there will be a plenty of fantastic opportunity to deploy alternative capital again in the shipping space from a lending perspective. And that capital can be incredibly helpful to many ship owners if the bank capital becomes scarce again.
Yeah, I echo that sentiment really. I think there's obviously, as the traditional banks have finding it difficult to deploy capital, what we don't want is for them to reduce the value of their loans to shipping. So that's why we've tried to support them. But obviously, we've got this whole green transition and investment in new types of vessels and technology to finance as well. And that's really where I see the private lending capital filling the void as well.
No, I think private credit definitely has a very important role to fill also going forward. I do think for some of them it's difficult to find the right deals in the current market. But I think medium to longer term, an important pocket.
Perfect. In the last 90 seconds that we have, I do want to use up all our time. So looking forward to the future, if you could just say, is there a word that you would throw out there that would kind of what you are expecting? Is it optimism, or is it sort of, sort of the thing that you think would, you know, project into the future as far as financing opportunities are concerned? Nothing to elaborate of, but is there a word that you can come kind of cross your mind that says, okay, this is where the market is?
Is it only one word? Or
I'll give you two words.
For me, cautious optimism. And to add to that, I think it's very important to stay alert and be flexible in today's fast-shifting market environment.
Perfect. Steve?
I'll do it in one word. I'll say pragmatism.
Words?
I would say diversification from a sourcing perspective to be able to tap the right capital throughout the cycles which are, again, incredibly cyclical.
Perfect. Fittingly, hopefully that was insightful for the audience here. Thank you to the panelists for sharing your thoughts and giving your views on where the trends of the ship finance market is currently. Thanks very much, Chip.
Thank you.